Shock the System. Welcome to Dank Discussions with me, Calican CEO Maynard Breslow. In each episode, you'll learn from the trailblazers, leaders, entrepreneurs, and influencers in the ever-moving, ever-growing cannabis industry. Hey there, everybody. Welcome to Dank Discussions. Today, we're joined by Michael Tullis. Michael is the owner at Early Fruit Hemp Company. Thanks for joining us today, Michael.
How are you doing, man? How are you doing?
Doing great. Happy to have you on today. Excited.
Definitely.
You know, we talk a lot about, in general, you know, craft beer. Today, we're going to talk about craft CBD and what that entails. First, you know, talk about where you're based out of.
For sure.
Yeah.
So we're based out of Lubbock, Texas, and that's right there in the Panhandle, right pretty much in the heart of Texas. It's like the best place to live, I think, the friendliest people, great community. So.
Well, yeah, for sure. I mean, I've mentioned before, I've spent a few years in Dallas, Texas, and such amazing people, such friendly people, and obviously, you know, I'm born and raised in L.A. So I going down and chilling in Venice and, hanging out, I see plenty of people with dreads, big, long dreads, like you have with the big beard. I don't recall anybody when I lived in Dallas, Texas, anybody having the big, long dreads. Is that,
it gets me a lot of questions at the grocery store. A lot of questions and a lot of looks, a lot of ugly looks from children.
Oh yeah.
Babies, mostly they're like, huh?
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Okay. I'm not sure what that is. So it's not a very common thing around here for sure, but there's a few of us.
Yeah. But it pretty much gives away what the industry you're in, I guess. They already automatically assume that you, oh, here's the stoner. Did you make a wrong turn? Are you like visiting or, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I get that all the time. I get a lot of, hey, I don't mean to stereotype you, but can you help me out?
Yeah. So now they want help. I see. That's cool.
Yeah.
That's funny, man. You know, and I guess. You know,
but yeah, and a lot of, you belong in this industry. You look like you're supposed to work here. I get that.
Why not? You know, and I guess, you know, it's so funny because the industry's opened up so much, right? The industry's opened up so much, not only in terms of location, you know, not, you know, so talking about cannabis, recreational, medical, but also talking about obviously hemp all over the country. But aside from that, demographic, where we talk about, you know, people who are older, the baby boomer generation, people who are getting older, people who are looking for relief for different ailments and who are trying to get better quality of life. But I guess, you know, so when we talk about, hey, yo, can you help me out? Or, hey, you seem part of the, that this you're in the right industry. Is it, you know, just people that you would expect, or also like we're talking about the moms, right? Like, you know, the babies with the moms, right? So I think we see a lot of times moms are kind of a big demographic these days. That
they really are, and actually
very stressed and looking to get some normal sleep, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I would definitely say that my customers are not who I expected them to be. Mm-hmm. For that reason, I do get a lot of mothers and a lot of retired people. Uh-huh. That are coming around, and it's crazy to see that I was wrong, first of all, that I thought people were going to be into it for the smoking immediately before anyone found anything. But I was flooded with people looking for relief from pain.
Yeah,
I was fortunate to be able to help them with that.
No, I mean, that's I think that's the greatest thing that we see. You know, I think the stigma still holds a lot of times. You know, we talk about stoner culture and, you know, even bringing up the dreads, right? That's even me saying that is kind of attaching that stigma to it. So I hope I didn't do anything like that, you know.
You didn't attach any stigma.
Observation, you know what I'm saying? It's an observation. But well, like I said, you know, there is that stigma, right, of the stoner culture. And, mm-hmm. you know, when people talking about whether – medical or recreational use, and then even with hemp, where people, you know, still going in, and it's a big thing. You know, people going to the stores and say, "Hey, you know, looking over the shoulders, they walk in the doors and wondering, you know, hopefully no one's going to see me." And you know, hey, I heard this thing could help me. Can you tell me more about it? Or, hey, you know what? I think this can help me, but I'm not looking to get high. Or is it going to get me high? Or, you know, am I going to be able to pass a drug test? Or what are the effects? And is that kind of your experiences as well now?
Yeah, but I wouldn't say they're so shy about it. Mm-hmm. They'll so most of my business is done at besides my website, of course. Most of my business is done at a farmer's market.
Okay.
And we're an outdoor market, and everyone's pretty much wide open, and I don't see anyone. No one's ever nervous coming up to talk to me. No one's ever looking behind their shoulders. Uh-huh. A lot of loud jokes. There's a lot of jokes, and then a lot of people just pointing and saying, "Hey, do you want to check this out?" And I don't really see very many people nervous about it as much as I would thought, but they're definitely curious about it.
Oh, cool. No, that's awesome. And I guess, you know, yeah, the farmers markets are great. The trade shows are great. You know, but you kind of haven't, you know, we tease at the beginning, you know, I think you have a different little bit of a spin. And I think those farmer markets is perfect for you, obviously, because we talk a lot about, you know, we have people who have great businesses, and we talk about, you know, huge vendors, big business, you know, a lot of distribution, and that's all fine and dandy. And there's a lot of great quality products out there, and there's also a lot of shitty products out there as well, right? We talk about that as a lot, and there's a lot of products out there that are shitty that look like they're good, and there's a lot of maybe products that are way better that they don't have the branding or anything like that. And then, you know, we look at other industries, like we mentioned, you know, as like the beer industry, right? Where everybody's got their own taste, right? Everybody's got their own taste, but there's a growing market now. Me being, you know, being from LA, and I love my beer, that's for sure. You know, so
we all should.
You know, I don't mind, you know, drinking, you know, people get mad at me, but, you know, I don't mind drinking the Coors Light when it's appropriate. I don't mind drinking Tecate when it's appropriate. You know,
That's a good word.
Yeah, you know. You know, it's not my go-to, but, you know, there's a time and place for that as well. And, but I definitely love getting my hands on some Stone IPA, you know, and, you know, some Lagunitas, some Racer 5, some of the more would-be, you know, now they're growing, right? But they're still considered craft.
Right, but when you heard of them, man, when you first heard of them, do you remember that?
It was
wow,
underground, right?
Like, how good this tastes.
Yeah, it was something completely new.
Was, Sierra Nevada, their IPA, man. That was the first one I had, and it just changed my life. I don't know what I was doing before that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, exactly. It's like, you know, graduating. I remember watching Beer Fest, and it's like, I remember my first beer. You know, it's like you have this stuff, and then you're like, what have I been doing with my life? And then it just kind of makes everything else not, you know, just not there. And and then aside from that, so like we said, you know, these now companies have become, you know, pretty well known, obviously. But then now it's about, you know, oh no, there's a microbrew right next to my buddy's house. You know, we got to go stop at that place. That's the spot right there. And, you know, you go and you look down the list, and you got to try this one. You got to try that one. Got to come back and try this one and that one and the other thing. And, you know, maybe I'll take a couple home, you know, in the big bottles, whatever else.
Yeah. You end up buying a couple of growlers while you're there.
Yeah, exactly.
I've got my share.
Exactly. So, and then we talk about that. That's, you know, this is such a young industry, obviously, in terms of, you know, the CBD and the different cannabinoids that are coming out, and how we're packaging them and distributing them, and how they're being branded, labeled, distributed. But there's a whole other thing, right? Like that people really aren't as attached to yet. And that's like kind of like this craft, right? Like just like the craft beer, like the craft CBD.
Yeah. So when I first started hearing about CBD coming out, I never heard of anyone smoking it, much less of a full spectrum or even a broad spectrum. All I heard was these isolated products. Uh-huh. They were sticking in honey sticks and gummy bears. And I thought, that's a weird thing to do. That was my first thought. It's still kind of my thought. Uh-huh. But they're making it work, and they're getting this product onto shelves and into the awareness of a lot of consumers who really need it, to be honest. And they need it in those isolated forms. Some of them do. Some really, really high concentrated versions of CBD. But what that's doing is now a lot of people who don't need all of that, they're starting to see CBD and thinking about it a little more. And they're starting to go back to, you know, their marijuana, and they're like, oh, why can't we do this with CBD? So they'll start growing them for smokables. And you just kind of have this trickle down of, it's in these big stores, and now people are wanting a better product. They're wanting something a little bit better, and so it's being made. And then that's happening again. They're saying, okay, wow, they're making full spectrums, but it's still these giant companies that are making these huge batches of it. Can we do better than that? And so you have these farmers that have been maybe doing it for generations with other cannabinoids in their backyard, and they started up into the hemp industry when it, you know, was a fledgling, and they've been doing it since 2014 or so, legally. And then, you know, it turns out they have a really good product. First of all, efficable, but delicious, and you want to use it, and you enjoy using it. It's not just something you're using for your health, or it's not just some novelty. Maybe a friend got you, so you thought you would try something that you're really into, and I think there's a place for that, for sure.
Oh, yeah, and I think, you know, like you mentioned, I think that that's kind of like a lost thing that we overlook a little bit because it is an industry, right? And we're looking for kind of the margins, and we're looking for to kind of be something to everybody and reach the masses. I think we lose sight of that, like you said, like what is the taste? What is the experience, right? I mean, we're looking at how can we, integrate these products into normal day products. How can we make it so that people don't feel like it's something scary or taboo, but there's still people out there.
Or something silly or something novel that's not, something that's not serious enough to be considered.
Yeah, I mean, it does get a little bit gimmicky, right? I mean, it looks like gimmicky. You know, it's like, CBD with this and CBD with that. And, you know, we were talking about off air, you know, how, you know, the skincare, you know, with Ella Cressman, we're talking about her and what's a gimmick and what isn't a gimmick, you know, what's actually would work and what actually wouldn't work. And we talk about that and other things as well, right? Where it's like, you know, we're talking about, you know, just to make a joke, right? Right now we're recording this on March 16th, 2020. And, the world is very much, in disarray, because of COVID-19.
To say the least,
you know, we're a lot of uncertainty, a lot of fear, a lot of panic, and obviously a lot of caution with good reason, no doubt about it. We still are in the early stages here in America and across the world, seeing what's been going on in Europe, obviously in China, and how I think the initial response was, hey, let's go buy up all the water, let's go buy up all the toilet paper, right? And, there's probably some marketer out there wanting to slap CBD on toilet paper right now. You know what I mean? And just saying like, hey, you know.
I've actually seen the post in one of our groups. Does anybody want to go into the hemp toilet paper business today?
Wow.
I was like, wow. See,
that's a gimmick. It's a marketing technique. Nobody cares about efficacy. Nobody cares if it works. Okay, cool. So if you show me CBD toilet paper is better, and it prevents this or that, or you put aloe vera, you find, you know, stuff with aloe vera in it and all that, whatever. Okay, so maybe it translates, I'm not sure. But at this moment, that would seem like it's very gimmicky, right? Because everybody.
Right, it doesn't seem like there's any research behind it.
Yeah, there's no research behind it. There's no reason for it other than the fact that, well, toilet paper's flying off the shelves, you know, why not charge four times more for the toilet paper because it got CBD on it, you know? And
right, or if it was made with hemp.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah.
Which I think is great, man, if they can start replacing things like that with hemp. But
well, that's a whole other discussion. I mean, I'm all about that. I'm all about the hemp industry as a whole and where we're going to be going with hemp as a whole in the future. And people talking about, you know, well, the CBD bubble bursts. And the first of all, I'm like, well, that's, you know, you want to talk about hysteria and, you know, just jumping to conclusions. Fine, we can do that. Or we can also talk about how, first of all, yes, it needs to stabilize, and yes, there needs to be a correction in terms of prices, but how it's opened the door for the hemp industry as a whole and reopen, you know, open that conversation up again about the textiles and the paper and everything else that goes along with it. So
I get so excited talking about all of that. And but you're right, it wouldn't be here without the front that CBD is making, the kind of impact it's making.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Now, I guess, you know, talking about craft CBD and just to continue the comparison, and I'm not sure if it's a one-to-one comparison at all. It's just something that came to my mind before we started discussing, you know, with the craft CBD and the craft beer, right? You know, you see that the craft, you know, we talk about that there's a certain demographic there that wants that craft CBD because it has different flavors, like for sure, you know, I think that's something that's lacking on the hemp side, because on the cannabis side, you know, on the THC side, you know, it's obviously that's like the main thing, right? I mean, people want to be able to smell, it's about the terpenes, right? The flavors and the effects and the kind of high and what, and, you know,
and
how
long. Yeah, and it's been like that for years. It's been like that. They always want to know, hey, so where did you get this from? What does it smell like? Oh, can I smell it or taste it really quick before I commit to it? And they really want the experience. They want to know what they're getting into.
Yeah. And we just kind of like
give them the space to do that.
CBD was, it's actually crazy. You know, I mean, you don't know where it's sourced from. You don't know who the people, you know, who they are, what they're about, what their motivation is, what their techniques are all the times, you know, where the laboratory, lab, isolate, everything that goes along with it, you know, and you just slap labels and claim third-party testing and here's my COA kind of stuff, which has its own levels of issues. But we haven't gone there yet, right, in terms of people probably want some good qualities, just smelling flowers, other things, you know, be able to enjoy it and not just about the, you know, the effects, which, of course, is there, right? I mean, I don't think that we've lost any of the effects on the THC side by creating better quality products, right? I mean, I think on the opposite, it's like we got better. What the hell is going on right now? You know, like get so stoned and stuff. That being said, I guess my question is what in that comparison with the beer and with the CBD, you know, people are paying a premium, right? You can go down the street and pick up, you know, a 12 pack or 16 pack of Bud, you know, just to throw something out there, Budweiser. Mm-hmm. And then you can go to your local shop, your local liquor store and get a 6-pack of something you never heard before, but you know that you're going to love. And the guy there is like, dude, this is awesome. Like, you got to give this a shot.
Yeah.
But like that 6-pack is going to cost as much as that.
The same as that 18 pack, that
you know, kind of thing, you know. So is that kind of like the same comparison at this point, or is it something?
I think it's actually the opposite right now. Mm. And that's weird, and I hope that switches, and maybe it will. Mm. But I see these products that are mass produced and mostly the isolate heavy ones. I'm sure that has to do with the processing involved. But they're extremely expensive. Like a 30 milliliter bottle that's going for like $120 at some of these stores around here, where my prices points letting me push it for around 60 or maybe 50 at some points. But I think that's because there's a lot less people involved in the supply chain, and there's a lot less processing, a lot less of the whole infrastructure that goes into getting my product from the farmer. Than from going through all these other places.
That makes sense. So, I mean, you know, so it's, you have your own sources, your own farmers. I know we're talking about that in the future. Got one very soon. You're also going to be getting your licensing here for your own farm. That's the plan. And
state willing, yeah.
Yeah. So sure. this is and obviously, like we said, you know, it's very uncertain times in general right now. So, would have been something that would be going through right now had it not been for obviously pandemic that is wreaking havoc on the entire world.
Yes, I could have.
You know,
I could have pressed all my buttons today.
You know, sometimes we don't know what we're doing sometimes, and we're trying to take things easy. That's for sure. And everybody out there listening, we're thank you for listening. You're in these times as well. Appreciate it. And I hope we can offer some normalcy in this time. And hopefully by the time this airs, actually, it won't even be quite such a thing. So there's just, like I said, a lot of uncertainty. But I guess the question is you know, how do you, we talked about how these are people who they've been growing for generations already, right? And now the opportunity is available now, you know, obviously entering the compliant market, the legal market. So how do you source your products? You know, talking about craft CBD, what does that necessarily mean in terms of what constitutes that and what wouldn't constitute that? And how do you find that and vet that and then offer that?
Well, I've never thought of it in so many steps, first of all. So I guess when I found out, it was all really all of a sudden around the end of 2018 when I found out that hemp was going to be federal and not just a pilot program in a few states. And I was like, wow, cool. And I started seeing it hit the shelves and I was like, cooler. So I tried a few of the products and I was kind of disappointed, especially in the pre-rolls, man. It seemed like they just put kefir powder or something and it wasn't smokable and by any means. I didn't like all the colors involved and everything, all the pretty labels and stuff. So from there, I thought about some of these people that I had been buying hemp from already, from Oregon and from other places. And I started thinking about them and talking to them about reselling some of their products. And then it did come down to the vetting about what was worth it and what wasn't worth it. So we've got some people who grow delicious smokable flower and they're great at putting it into pre-rolls and they do it all by hand and it's a great product, but some people aren't so good at that. So we wouldn't use their flower, but they've got some dank tinctures, yes. Right? They've got some really potent or really efficable tinctures that work for a lot of people across a broad range of people. But they still do it by themselves and it's still a good experience and a delicious product. I would say flavor and experience and aroma and all of that is a big part of it as well. And then the people that are good at the tinctures are usually pretty good at the salves as well.
Usually pretty good at the what? I'm sorry? Didn't
catch the salves and the topical stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like that. Mm-hmm.
So you kind of go like that. And then people reach out to you and they want to be, maybe they want to supply you with some stuff. But it's just really you're paying attention to how professional have they been when they're approaching you or were there samples? Did you like the samples? I mean, that's one of my favorite parts is getting samples.
Oh man, I love, that's my favorite part about hosting a podcast, you know,
you get all the right stuff.
You know, it's great, man. I love it. Come on.
Cool, man. Yeah, definitely. And it's a great time and I get to share those with people who give me some good feedback, some partners, but also friends and family. And that's really how I decide if it works for a few people that I'm close to and then maybe it works for a few people that I'm not so close to and they don't have a reason to be biased anyway. And then if I enjoy it myself, I think that's kind of how I decide if it's worth bringing in.
Uh-huh. Good. I guess, you know, and I think we kind of jumped into the topic pretty quickly and that's a good thing. But, you know, I also want to hear about your background in general in cannabis, you know, because, you know, being from Lubbock, Texas, you know, like you said, the way that people look at you or the whole culture in general is a little bit different, right, obviously, than it is in the West Coast, where it's kind of, you know, thing kind of, you know, it's a whole different look on it. And we don't, you know, I can walk into a store, into a dispensary, and be able to get any kind of product that I want. And I've been able to since 2005, since I first got my medical license in that regard. So I guess... tell me your background in cannabis in general and what led you to Early Fruit Hemp Company.
Okay, cool. So, well, I started kind of around maybe 20 or 21 years old, I really started using cannabis heavy just because of the enjoyment of it. You know, it's fun to do, and it's fun to smoke. I know I don't have to explain it, but man, I love to. It's fun to taste it and to breathe it out of your nose and your nose. It's great. And to open the jar and then close the jar and then open the jar again. Stick your nose in. So I always had a lot of fun with that. And I always was able to find really good product somehow. And that eventually led into me finding really good product for other people. And that lasted for a couple of years until, like I said, I found out that hemp was going to be okay federally. And I was like, got to cut my ties here. Got to clean myself up, you know, and just, just personal things, but you know, you don't want to risk too much. And then knowing that I was able to kind of help people find good products beforehand, I figured, why not? If I'm not enjoying the products that I'm seeing here right now, why don't I go ahead and do that? In the hemp industry, kind of leave the marijuana a little behind and try and focus this here. And this is actually helping a little more people than I was the other way around. So I get a little bit more out of it personally too.
Amazing, amazing. And you know, starting early food hemp company, and I mean, I love that because you know, like you said, I think sometimes the best businesses are built off of seeing the need ourselves or needing the need ourselves and saying, hey, you know what, I'm not finding the quality that I need, or I'm not seeing the service that I'm looking for. And I see that there's other people who are also looking for that. So I'm going to fill that role. Right. And kind of thing. And I guess, you know, one of the things that I, like I said, encouraged me to reach out to you to jump on is, you know, how I'm so passionate about entrepreneurship, passionate about cannabis, passionate about what we're doing and education. And I think, you know, when we talk about entrepreneurship, having a business, I think a lot of times we talk about, you know, obviously it's risky and obviously we're taking chances and we don't know what's going to happen. And a lot of ups and a lot of downs, a lot of times when things don't look like they're going to work out. And then a lot of times it's like, holy shit, this is amazing and growing and two steps forward, one step back and something like that. But I think we romanticize a lot of times. We romanticize this whole idea of those ups and downs, of the big ups, or we romanticize quitting your job and going into the business head on and dedicating all your time to this. And I think sometimes it's good and sometimes it's not so good. And I think your journey, I want to reach out to you. Your journey has been a little different because you're still holding down a full-time job while you're running your company, correct? I mean, you have your e-commerce platform and you have your farmer's market and everything like this. But you made the choice to, you know, live a stable, sustainable life that you know you're going to be able to be there in the future. And maybe sometimes those questions still come up. Do you find that it makes it more sustainable for you for the long run? Or do you feel like it's kind of takes away from your time to be able to jump into it? Or kind of give me your experience. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Talk to me about your experience as an entrepreneur.
So, first of all, yeah, I daydream all the time about quitting my job. That's all I want to do. But in reality, back where I guess I'm supposed to be, I actually really like, so I work at UPS part-time. I load the trucks for them in the morning. First thing is like 3 to 9 most of the year. But, during Christmas season, it's like, and this is where it hurts. It's about sometimes midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning through 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Is a full 12-hour shift sometimes. And during Christmas, it definitely, I noticed ate into the business. I was sleeping a lot more and getting a lot less done. But for the most part, getting up and making sure that Well, first of all, you know, getting up, making sure I get a good workout at UPS starts my day right.
You get that sprint in, right?
That's a jog.
You see those memes where you know the UPS training sessions where they're like make you run and drop it and press the button and then run away, you know?
Oh yeah, I didn't have to go through any of that. Luckily, I'm not gonna drive one of those big trucks, but I sure will. But we sure do have to run with some big old packages, and it takes its toll. I keep a good jar of hemp salve in my bag just to make sure if I get a little sore.
Nice.
But then I get all day, so I get off around 8, sometimes 9. At the latest, I'm going to get off at 10 o'clock during most of the year. And I have the full day ahead of me to tackle things, to make sure my inventory is fully stocked, to make sure that all of my emails are sent and all of my website and all of my media is updated, and to make contact with people and to make sure that I'm staying up to date with the regulations and with the laws of the industry. It feels like I have 2 full days. It feels like I have a full day working and making a stable living at the UPS, which is nice. And I don't think I could give that up anytime soon. Uh-huh. Even if I wanted to, the benefits are top notch. But then I get a whole second day. My day starts all over again when I get to do what I love to do. And I don't feel like it. I don't feel like it has too much of an effect. Like I said, except during Christmas time, I sleep a lot more.
I don't know. I mean, that's great. I mean, I think something like that. Like I said, you know, we romanticize that whole thing, and you know, quitting your job. And you know, I'm grateful. I haven't had quote unquote a job in many years. I'm grateful for that. And but yeah, like you said, there are times where it's like, man, it'd be great to just be able to go in. And you know, it wasn't always so easy. It wasn't always something where it was stable. It wasn't always something where I knew that for sure things were coming in. And I was like, man, it would be great if I could just go and you know, have something on the side and being able to have that stability and know that things are taken care of. And also not only that, but you know, being able to, like you said, the benefits that come along with it and everything like that. So I think everybody needs to kind of look into that. I know we have a lot of listeners, people who are in the industry doing really well, people who maybe just be starting off, need some more, you know, some more growth. But it's definitely something that I always encourage, is to take your time to do things gradually, grow with your business. Right. I mean, especially in this industry.
Definitely grow with your business.
Grow with your business. You know, so many
Yeah, dude. There's too many horror stories going around this industry of people jumping in head first. Man, I wasn't about that. It's not that I'm not about that. I would love to. If I had it like that, I sure would.
But some of them don't. They got capped. Either they went all in a lot of times, and sometimes we're talking about farmers, unfortunately, or people from all sectors, right, within the industry. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes people, they took on investors, and so having that capital doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be successful, right? And it doesn't necessarily.
Right. You still have to have people come into your door. I see CBD shops all over my town that are. The parking lots are empty all day long. And
it's kind of saddening
to see, you know, people really invested a lot of money into this.
Yeah, no, it's definitely tough. And, you know, even with our clients, you know, I have clients that, of course, I'm really grateful. And a lot of them are in huge, huge positions and killing it and continue to kill it. And we help them to grow and expand. And then we get on people who want to be there, maybe aren't there. And sometimes I have to tell them, hey, you know what? Let's slow the roll a little bit. Let's take it this step. Yes, we want to get there. We can get there. I believe we can get there.
I've kind of been using this, this rule of don't expand until you have to. There's no reason to go too far too fast. So if you have the option to stay doing it just where you are in this, you know, in one little room, and you're doing it online and you're doing it at the farmer's market, then stay there. until you're forced to move to a bigger venue and you're forced to do things on a bigger scale. There's no reason to force. There's no reason to stress yourself, and there's no reason to do it too fast.
Yeah, definitely. It's really tough. And but there's ways of scaling, like you said, at the proper pace, at the proper time. You know, when there comes a time where you have so many orders you can't fulfill, then it's for sure time to order, you know, to hire another employee, you know, when it comes to the time then where you know, your store is just going crazy, then it may be time to look at opening up another store or opening up another avenue, or then it may be time to, you know, to expand your marketing reach and to, you know, expand from where you are right now and to maybe push more throughout the state or nationally. You know, but I definitely always encourage people. I say, hey, you know what, just like you're doing with the, you know, with the farmer's market, right? I say, you know, if you have a store and you have customers coming in, what are you doing to leverage those customers you have now into new customers, right? What are you doing there to do that? You know, as opposed to people all of a sudden, they want to, you know, expand and spend all kinds of money that maybe they don't have. I say, hey, you know what, listen, let's first take these clients, these customers that you have now, and let's turn them into more customers, you know?
Let's turn them into loyal customers.
Yeah, yeah. How can we get them back, you know, so they come back every single month? You know, how do we
exactly make it every month, every 2 months?
Yeah, so that we know that every month they're spending a couple $100, that the average customer is spending $200, and that you can, you know, how can we get them on membership programs? How can we get them on loyalty programs?
You know, and that's something we're always, that's something we're always looking at. And that's something that's, and honestly, the relationship with the customer might be the most important, might be the most important way to do that. If you have the opportunity to really sit down, I've noticed, and answer the questions that they have and make them feel comfortable and, you know, do whatever you can to find them what they're actually looking for and not just what you want to sell them. I think that they trust that, and they know what you're doing, and they trust you, and they're way more willing to come back to you. No doubt. Way more willing to tell their friends about you as well.
That's always like that. No one wants to be, first of all, we live in a time where no one wants to be sold anything, right? And we definitely don't want to be sold.
Don't
think we need that. We want to buy it.
I want to buy it, but we don't want you to sell it to you.
Exactly. And don't tell me that I need this and this and this when I know that this is what I need. You know, and
right? Exactly.
That's what I'm looking for. You know, you know, people need to do a better job of listening to what our clients and our customers need and what they're looking for, and that's what's creating loyalty. You know, people look for experiences. Right. You know, going back to why craft beer, why craft CBD, because people are looking for experiences, right? People are looking for experience, right?
Right. They want the benefits, sure, but they want to enjoy it, and they want to know.
Yeah,
where it's coming from.
There's plenty of places to get the benefits. There's plenty of places to get the benefits from. There's plenty of places selling, you know, great products, and there's people selling the exact same products, right? I mean, you go into one store and they've got the same 20 vendors as the
other. Oh yeah.
You know, and that's okay too. But one store is you wonder why one store is across the street and one store is full and the other one's empty. And maybe the person says, well, they opened up 2 months before me, or they opened up 2 months after me, or there is no rhyme and reason unless you go inside and you talk to the employees and you talk to the owner and you know, and you realize, oh, dude, these guys are just way more knowledgeable. Or, you know, when I come in here and I feel different when I come in here, this is like a better store. You know, it doesn't matter what you sell. It's how you sell it. You know, it matters what the experience is. And I think that, like you said, is corresponds to what you're doing with the craft CBD and why it's so important to have the, you know, the smaller farms or the smaller brands that people may not know. You know, they may not come into asking, hey, you know what, I need this and that and this and that, where they're trusting you and they're saying, no, man, this is the good stuff right here. Look, let's check this out. We just got this. We're really excited about this. We really believe in what these guys are doing here. Go home, check it out. Here's a sample. Check this out. Tell me back. Come back and tell me how you feel. You know, if you do that, that's better than you telling someone, hey, take this. This is what's good for you. And then they'd never come back again. You know, so it's so much more important, you know, to really give that experience.
Right. And I've had those happen too. You know, just bad communication, or the customer's bad, or to be honest, I'm bad at communication sometimes. And you do accidentally give someone something and then you feel really bad about it. I think that keeps you from doing it that way next time. It makes you pay a lot more attention for sure.
No, definitely. Now, you know, in terms of that, you know, talking about the experience and talking about everything that we're going to talk about in the craft, I guess, what has been your biggest obstacle that you faced so far in this market, and how have you been able to overcome it?
They're all pretty big. It first, you know, it was, I know how I would make money, but how do I form a business? So I had to learn all of that. Never done that before. It was a blast. And then it was, now that you have a business, it turns out that none of the banks are going to work in the hemp industry yet. So that was a blast. You get shut down by
that was fun.
The first bank, you get shut down by the second bank.
Yeah.
Then PayPal catches on and they shut you down.
Oh yeah.
And you find a bank that finally wants to work with you, but now you can't find any processors that aren't going to charge you an arm and a leg. I ended up with Square, by the way. They were great. Got a whole program, so I feel a lot more confident knowing that such a big player, I guess, is kind of backing the industry finally. But now it's going to be just what I'm doing. I think it's just going to be doing it for a lot more people, and I'm not sure how to do that. I think that's the biggest obstacle I'm facing right now.
So now it's kind of like a matter of scaling, a matter of being able to grow, a matter of being able to bring more awareness to that craft, right? I mean, I think exactly, talking about craft beer, exactly. Going back to the old analogy that we've been using, you know, with craft beer, it was something that kind of, because of the hipster kind of way about it, it becomes less hipster once everybody knows about it, right? It becomes less cool once everybody kind of is caught on to it, right? So it's kind of this thing where it kind of have to, you know, just from my point of view, I guess, maybe your experience is different. It's kind of something that has to be done a lot more with the word of mouth kind of thing, as opposed to, you know, in your face all the time kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. You don't want to over advertise something that's supposed to relax you. Mm-hmm. Stress people out that way.
That's funny, for sure. So cool.
And that's the other thing, you kind of have to do it word of mouth right now. Everyone's cutting, I'm sure you mean, you're in the marketing. Mm-hmm. How hard is it to get an ad on Facebook or an ad on
Oh Google? Man, this is one of the common questions. I love this question. This is my favorite question, because the point is, yeah, I mean, it's impossible. You don't want to get it on there because, let's say you're able, you know, there's some companies that claim that they can get you on to Facebook, Google, using different techniques. The problem is that if they catch on to those techniques and they shut you down, just like there's black market mm-hmm. SEO, you know, black hat SEO as well, where, yeah, you can build your backlinks and build your site to make it rank in the next month. But guess what? Google now has algorithms that's going to be able to find those out. And if they find that out, they're going to shut down the entire site completely. Right. So mm-hmm. not only have you now lost your site, but you've now lost your whole, not just the site itself, but now your credibility, your authority, your URL,
right?
Oh, it's blacklisted. Right. So everything there now goes into that. Right. So it's not just like something where, okay, cool, let's throw another one up. You know, now you have to build everything up all over again from scratch. So the reason why I bring that up.
I never had this concern until just now.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, that's, what I love, the reason why I say I love it is because, you know, we talk about craft beer and we're talking about mainstream beer. We're talking about, you know, these big, gigantic, you know, people are pushing really hard. There's a lot of money in the quote green rush. And I hate that term, but you know, there's a lot of money here and a lot of people pushing really hard. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people doing the craft CBD stuff like we're talking about today. Right. And you know, the difference is that, the reason why I love that we can't run ads anymore is because no one can run ads right now, right? So the mm-hmm. fact that no one can run ads right now, that means that gives people like you a chance to actually succeed, Because if
right, I get a little time to breathe, a little time to grow as best as I can.
Not just even that. The fact of the matter is that once the second that you can start running Facebook ads, Instagram ads, Google ads, and being able to do that freely, guess what's going to happen? All these companies with all the funding are going to throw in their money in, and that's how they're going to scale, right?
Oh, yeah.
So how are people like you going to be able to succeed, you know, with $5 a day, $10 a day, you know, $100 a day, you know, kind of thing when these people are throwing in thousands and thousands of dollars a day, right?
Yeah, that's a good point. So Google accidentally so I guess I left some kind of permission for them to auto-create ads for me. Uh-huh. And they threw one up there that ran for a weekend and got me a crazy amount of views to clicks to my website.
Yeah.
Ranked up a huge bill and didn't sell a single thing from that over that weekend. And I was like, wait a minute, hold on. So I was a little upset and I figured it out. And I was like, wow, this could be pretty risky. Then it really set in that there's people that can afford that on a huge scale, and they can afford to mess up the advertisements till they find the perfect one.
And that's the whole thing, right? So we want to get into it a little bit. You know, there's not just that one ad that's going to be the money ad, but it's how do you get there? How many tests, how many split tests do you have to play with? Which one's the one that gets it there, and how much money you have to spend to get there? Not only that, but like you said, you already got all the clicks to your site and you didn't get any sales. Right. You know why?
Yeah, it was a terrible ad.
The next thing. No, aside from that, it's not that. I mean, from that point, then we want to see, okay, well, how is the site optimized? It could be that they got to the site and they said, actually, this isn't what I was looking for. Or I don't know where to even shop, or where is the products, or how do I do this? Or maybe they didn't like the look, or there's many different reasons, right? Because then it turns into optimization onto the website in and of itself. But the thing is that, let's say all that's line and everything's
fine. that's a whole other monster,
right? But then even aside from that, going back to ads, then there's retargeting ads. So now we know that you've already been on the website. Now there's a cookie on your browser knowing that you came on to earlyfruithempco.com and that you were ready to buy but you didn't. So why not? So then you create another ad, throw more money at it, and that's where the real money is. The real money is in the retargeting ads, not in the first initial ads. Right. So the real money is in the retargeting ads, and how are you going to get them back to your site? Because it usually takes, right, we say in marketing, it takes 7 touches for a sale. Right. So you can do those touches in different 7 different ways. Right. They could be in different ways. You can run different ads and follow them around the internet. Right. Or you can have a brand that they see in different places that they're excited about. You know, there's different ways to get in front of people. What's the most cost-effective way? What's the way that's going to convert people the best, right? So that's what we're always looking to do as well. I'm saying in general. Right. That's what we're always looking to do, right? So it's a general principle. It's just a matter of how we go about it. And that's why I say fuck Facebook ads and fuck Instagram ads and fuck Google ads. And I hope that they always block cannabis from being on there, because the way it's going to change the whole, first of all, the platform, but also the industry is going to be tremendous, because when that happens, we talk about the winners and the losers. There's going to be a big gap, and it doesn't matter if you have a good internal culture or if you have quality products. It's just going to matter how much money you have to throw at the ads and at the retargeting ads and at the split ads and at the testing and at everything else that goes along with it,
right?
As opposed to now, where you have to have a real quality product and build a real business. And that's why you see a lot of these companies that have all the money and they have all the market research that came from different sectors, why they're failing and laying off their employees, because they just scaled and said, hell, we're looking for margins. So get that shitty hemp from across the world and or from over here and slap a label on it, or let's just put it on some white label, and who the hell cares anyways? No one cares. It's just CBD, right? And then you see, or it could be with the THC side, with the dispensaries,
right,
and everything that goes along with that. So you're seeing it all across industry wide, in all sectors, how, you know, it's something that we don't want, because this is something we've been fighting for a long time, and there's people who weren't fighting. And with the ad game, he who has the most money wins in ads. you know, because he has more time, he has more money to make mistakes, he has a bigger runway, and he has, you know, stuff to play with. So it wouldn't work out, you know, for Michael Toews or for, you know, a plethora of other people out there. So for me, it's the best thing for everybody industry-wide, for sure. That's my spiel.
Right. And no, it's a good one. I agree with it a lot. I think the best way for the smaller players to stay in it in the long run is to have a really solid foundation of loyal customers, and to have a really, I guess, organic method of growth, word of mouth, kind of be, you know, local sponsorships. You know, if you can sponsor some soccer team somewhere, or, you know, or a school play or something. People really, I think, if you're going to survive, the bigger industry getting involved, it's going to be with your local community for the most part. I think that'll be the way you have to do it. So get involved and stay involved, and treat your customers like you care about them.
Yeah. 100%.
Or just, if you don't care about your customers, don't do it anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's a better way to say that.
Yeah. And there are ways to still expand nationally, even with that, you know, with those techniques, you know, you're at home, you know, you have your place, you have your stuff there in Lubbock. There's a way to start, you know, building your e-commerce while leveraging that. And it's really, like I said, like we're talking about, growing with your business. You know, you got to grow with your business. Mm-hmm. And people want to jump into the big techniques that they really don't know about, and then they hire people that don't know what they're doing either, or they're not really in the cannabis industry, and they do techniques that work for other industries but not for this industry. And then I do hear a lot of sad stories in that term as well, but
very good me as well. And I have a good group of people around me that if I get a little fast-minded about a certain project, they'll tell me to calm down. Yeah. Just take it easy. Remind me what it is that we're actually trying to do.
Yeah.
That's good. It's good to have that.
No, 100%. 100%. Very good. And I guess, you know, what can we expect here from Early Fruit Company in the future? What do you guys have coming lining up?
Well, like I said, we just finally got on board with Square. So our e-commerce platform is open at earlyfruithempco.com. So not much, go take a look at it. We really, really, if y'all have any advice on that, I'd love that. And then, like I said, man, I was trying to get integrated and hoping to put in my application. Today's the first day to put in applications for growing, but we're not sure about that. So we'll see how that goes. And I hope that you can look forward to that.
Oh, definitely. You know, like we're saying, this is very, very treacherous times right now. Mid-March 2020, coronavirus, and we don't know what's going to happen. And I think the smartest thing to do is not to say, no matter what, we're going to do it, no problem. And not to say, cancel all plans. Nothing's, you know,
it's the middle line.
Now, the middle line. Be safe, be cautious. And let's wait and see, you know, let's play the, you know, we're going to wait and see. And it could be in a couple of weeks, it's going to be prime time, and you'll be able to go and do that application, and everything's going to free up. And we don't know, you know, so it very well could be a month from now. But, you know, if we start getting ahead of ourselves and, you know, then that's where the mass hysteria starts coming in, and then they start making, you know, a CBD toilet paper and stuff. So, very good, man. So cool. And you know, I always bring on and always ask, how do you define success, whether it be professionally, personally, existentially? What does success look like for you?
I think success kind of, it's a lot of different. I like the way you broke it up. So personally, I like to think of success as accomplishing whatever it was that you set out to do, even if that's a new everyday life, or whether that's a big goal you had planned and you finally did it. I think that's success. But then I think it's how well are the people around you doing? Is your community good? Are your friends and your family in a good place? And if not, are you in a place where you're able to help them? I think that's success. But I don't think it's a destination anywhere. I don't think you can get to it. I think you just have to live in it if you can.
100%. I love that. I love that. And I've mentioned that before. You know, I always say happiness, there is no road to happiness. Happiness is the road. And I think that holds true as well with success, right? You know, setting goals, right? Setting, you know, having a big goal, so to speak, and breaking it down into pieces and achieving little pieces, breaking it down and moving forward. It's an action, exactly. Right? It's an active thing. Success is active. I think it's not something mm-hmm. where like, I made it, baby. I made it. I'm at the top of the mountain. You know, then it's like, now what? You know, I mean, I was always, you know, based on what you're saying, I was always raised, you know, my mom, you know, grew up in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, Super Nintendo, having Super Mario Brothers. And I used to spend hours like trying to beat Super Mario. And I used to get pissed and like, oh, I can't beat this level. And my mom used to say, she said, listen, just enjoy the game, because you know what? Once you beat the game, then what are you going to do? You know, you're going to go back to the beginning and find another game to play. You know, so enjoy the game right now. You know, don't get so pissed.
That's beautiful.
You know, so it's the same kind of thing. You know, you get to the end, you beat, you know, King Bowser at the very end. And then you know, you rescue Princess Peach. And you're like, okay, shit, now what? You know, so it's so much more enjoy the journey. That the journey in itself is the success. So I appreciate you sharing that as well. So very good. Michael, we didn't even get into I wanted to talk about Michael Tullis, Tully Blanchard, but you know what, we'll save that for another time.
But for sure, we'll touch that later.
Yeah, I guess as we close, Michael, how can listeners find out more about you? You already mentioned it a little bit, but find out more about you. Come and see your products, Early Fruit Hemp Company, and all your craft CBD products. Very unique and connect with you.
Yeah, so earlyfruithempco.com is the website. It's a long one, but it's worth the type. And then we have on all of our social medias, there's Instagram that is probably my least active. Then but if you go onto our Facebook page or maybe our Twitter account, that's probably where you're going to find me the most, and you'll find our community, and you'll be able to contact me the easiest through that. We also have a place for that on the website too.
Very good. Very good. Michael, appreciate it. Very appreciate it. And everybody go check out his stuff. And thank you everybody also for listening in these, we mentioned these trying times, these uncertain times. And hopefully by the time this airs, we will have a lot more clarity. That's for sure. So I appreciate you, Michael, as well, for jumping on with me today. Yeah.
I appreciate you having me. It was a blast.
Pleasure's all mine. Really appreciate it. Cool guy. Cool stuff what you guys are doing. And able to share a lot of insight into the craft CBD side and everything. And I really appreciate that. Brought a lot of value. So good luck to you. Thanks again for jumping
definitely
on.
I hope so.
Yeah, definitely. And so good luck to you in the rest of 2020 and beyond. We at Calican are passionate about cannabis marketing, branding, and web design. If you're a cannabis entrepreneur and you know you need an uptake in business or an upgrade in the way your customers perceive you, come check us out at calican.com and schedule a time to speak with us. Plans start at $248. Thanks for listening in to Dank Discussions, and we are so grateful for each and every one of you. We want to continue making dank content you want, so give us some feedback about the topics you want covered. Feel free to reach out to us at grow@calican.com, that's CALACANN.com, and follow us on Instagram for our latest updates.